Hear that? It's the call of the Crave. And when the Crave calls, you know what to do. Try the $5 Bacon Bundle. Because the only thing better than a White Castle slider is a White Castle slider topped with crispy hickory smoked bacon. So pick any two of either the Bacon Cheese Slider, 1921 Bacon Cheese Slider, or Chicken Bacon Ranch Slider. And also get a small fry for just $5 with the $5 Bacon Bundle. White Castle. Follow your Crave.
Imagine earning a degree that prepares you with real skills for the real world. Capella University's programs teach skills relevant to your career so you can apply what you learn right away. Learn how Capella can make a difference in your life at capella.edu.
This isn't your average business podcast, and he's not your average host. This is the James Altucher Show. Today on the James Altucher Show.
Today's Q&A podcast includes a brand new 30-day book challenge plus the business model behind it. I promise if you write this book, I will read it. Then I talk about what are dead people doing with all those stimulus checks, an update on the elections as I see it on the gambling sites. Is it time to buy silver? How many businesses have already gone out of business from this lockdown? And also I talk about the common mistakes that every business makes. And actually the question was about what are the common mistakes for podcasts, but applies for every single business. Plus I have the BS headline of the day and much more. Text me at 203-590-8607. Enjoy the Q&A. Hey, welcome to Live. We were just on a plane yesterday, so we missed the live Q&A yesterday. But when we're on a plane, every time I've gone on a plane in the past few months, which is only twice, people always ask, were we afraid of getting the virus on a plane? And the answer is no. I don't know why. First off, we're wearing masks. Yeah. Here's the thing. You go on an airplane now. The airports are empty. So instead of there being 200 people in line in front of us in security, there's three people in line. Then you can go huge stretches without seeing anybody. It's almost like how New York City, Times Square, in the middle of a pandemic. There's just nobody at the airport. And then when you get on the plane, usually the stewardesses are wearing some sort of mask and gloves. And they've limited what they serve you. Like, there's no alcohol on a plane. Some planes don't have coffee or other things. You can get, like, a water. And instead of having a whole meal, there's, like, a snack box. So it's very quick to eat. It doesn't have anything good in it. Have you been eating the snack box? Yeah. You've been getting, like, the hummus snack box. I get just, like, the gummy bear snack box. And so people have their mask off for maybe, like, 3 minutes on the entire plane ride. And I have not heard, like, you asked a stewardess how many stewardesses are getting coronavirus now that planes are getting more active. What was the answer?
She said she doesn't know of any.
She didn't know of any coronavirus cases.
The people that she works with.
So my guess is it's probably hard to get coronavirus on a plane. I think nobody knows how to get a coronavirus, but the way I've heard that's most common is if you're just on top of somebody for days and days breathing on them, like on a cruise line or in a conference, or if I'm going on you all day long, you might get coronavirus if I'm a super spreader. And then if you're in a nursing home. So I haven't really heard of that many. I haven't heard of any cases where someone was on a plane and then suddenly they got coronavirus. We did hear recently somebody got it while at a ski resort, but that could be because it's cold and dry.
They were lodging with the person, right? Weren't they lodging with the people?
Yeah, so they were lodging with a bunch of people. And of course, when you're coming in from the cold, you're all like, you know, spitting or whatever. I don't know, because you're so cold. You're like trying to breathe warm air. So the answer is, I know a lot of people who have been scared to go on planes. I have not been scared at all. I don't think you've been scared at all. But you know what's benefited from the fear of planes? RV companies. So Camping World, which is a stock, that stock has gone, it's the stock owned by Marcus Lemonis, who is the star of the TV show The Prophet, that stock has gone through the roof. So RV companies have benefited. But no, I am not scared of going on a plane. So let's answer. First, I just saw a headline, which might not be the bullshit headline of the day. This might be a good headline. It's on CNN.com. I have money. So I gamble on the election at predicted.org, and I have a bet now on who is going to be the Joe Biden's VP nominee. So here's a headline I'm about to click on it. And Joe Biden is entering the final month of his search for a running mate. And so the top four prospects are Kamala Harris of California, Elizabeth Warren of Massachusetts, which I think is a no. I think he can't stand Elizabeth Warren. Val Demings of Florida as a congressman, and Atlanta Mayor Keisha Lance Bottoms. Now, Keisha, I like calling her Keisha. She was my original bet that I was betting on to be the vice presidential candidate. I forgot. I think I switched, though. I think after the Atlanta shootings, I figure she has no chance because people always bring up that. So I switched my bet. By the way, I just looked at predicted.org and there's something surprising there about Biden versus Trump, which I'll get to in a second once I log in. College affiliation. I don't want them to know what college I'm in. Everybody wants your information. Oh, what college did you go to? That's none of your business. I'm making bets on your platform. I don't need to tell you. Okay. Let's see. Vice presidential nominee Kamala Harris is up to 49 cents. And I fortunately got rid of my Keisha Lance Bottoms position, which has fallen to 5 cents. I bet on her when she was at 8 cents. And I switched to Val Demings, the congressman from wherever. I don't even know where she's from. I'm up 2 cents. I bought her at 13 cents. Now I'm at 15 cents. So hopefully she's the pick. I don't know why I'm hearing some noise. Oh, CNN. There's always noise on CNN. So, predicted.org, I've been taking quite a beating lately, though, because here's the thing. I was betting against the fact that Joe Biden would be the nominee. I was very suspicious when Andrew Cuomo wanted to cancel the New York primary, which has so many delegates. I thought this was part of a scheme to make sure there was a brokered convention, but it looks like Biden has clinched everything, and now this is the biggest I've ever seen. On predicted.org, they're saying Biden is 61 cents to win the presidential election. For the longest time, he was at 47 cents. For 6 months in a row, he was at 47 cents, and Trump was at 51 cents. Now Biden's at 61 cents. Trump is at 39 cents. This is the highest I've ever seen Biden and the lowest I've ever seen Trump. So, I don't know. Predicted.org is basically making a solid prediction on who's going to win. I like these. I don't like listening to the polls because have you ever even answered a poll? Like, who does the poll call? Do they call people with landlines? Like, I don't even have a landline. When was the last time you had a landline as opposed to a cell phone? In China?
No. Probably before we moved overseas. 2005.
So in 2005 was the last time you had a landline.
Yeah.
And ever since then, just cell phones.
Right.
So who are they even calling for these polls? Oh, Biden just ticked up. Did you see that? It just ticked up from 61 cents to 62 cents. Yeah. Trump, though, still at 39 cents.
I don't know. This isn't.
No, predicted that. Here's the thing. Prediction markets, people are putting money at risk. So I find it to be much more valid than polls.
Right, but they're also wanting their wish. Like, they're, like, trying to...
But who would want to lose? Like, you could bet up to $1,000. Like, who would want to lose that much money on just because they wish Biden would win or they would wish Trump would win? So anyway, that's predicted.org. But this is related. I want to do another 30-day book challenge. I feel like with every election, or I feel like, let's say you and I meet, oh, we brought our dog with us to Florida. So we're in Florida now. We came back to Florida yesterday from New York City. We brought our dog, or I should say Robin's dog. I don't really like dogs that much, but this dog is cute. So you want to bring Wookie over here to say hi? So, I was thinking of another 30-day book challenge, and I realized with everyone I meet, and I don't know if this is true for everyone you meet, but I feel like everyone has got their issues. Like, everyone has got, like, one or two issues that are make or break. Mm-hmm. So that a simple one is pro-life versus pro-choice. So they will, you know, if someone's pro-life or if someone's pro-choice, mm-hmm. all of their friends feel the exact same way they do. All their candidates feel the exact same way. That's their issue. And then other issues are important also. But like, if you don't agree with them on pro-life versus pro-choice, you're not their friend, you're not their candidate, whatever. But everybody's got different issues. So some people it's abortion, some people it's guns. Are you pro-gun or not pro-gun? And there's no nuance. Like, if we're pro-gun, it's like, yeah, my three-year-old could have an AK-47. What are you trying to do? Restrict his right to bear arms or restrict his right to arm bears? Like, what is it? And for other people, the issue is freedom of speech. You know, another issue might be, death penalty or no death penalty. Another issue might be taxes go up, or taxes go down. Another issue might be, healthcare for all or no healthcare for all. So here's what I would read this book. If someone could make a book of, you can call it whatever you want, like, you know, what do you believe? Or the 30 most important issues. Or, you know, if you don't believe this, then you're not my friend. Or whatever you want to call it. And figure out what for you are the 30 most important issues. And then look at what's the history of that issue? What's the scientific research on that issue? And also, what's the history of the issue in politics? So for instance, you know, pro-life, pro-choice, there's a history, there's a history of that issue that goes back 5,000 years. But what's the political history? Like, when did pro-choice define being Democrat and pro-life define being Republican? Because, by the way, Richard Nixon, one of the biggest Republicans in the past 50 years, I mean, the guy was vice president for 8 years and then president for 6 years and then famously resigned. He was a pro-choice Republican. Mm-hmm. So, and, you know, even Reagan was probably pro-choice, even though he appointed some pro-life justices. So, although it's unclear. So there's the history of the issue. There's the history of the issue in political history. And then there's the scientific research. So does healthcare for all, what does the science say? Does it make for better healthcare or worse healthcare? Does lower taxes help the economy or hurt the economy? So when John F. Kennedy was president, the highest tax rate was 91%. The lowest tax rate in recent years has been around 30 or 35%. So what's been better for the economy? What's been better for the stock market? What's the history of taxes in the United States? I don't think there was a federal tax in the United States until the late 1800s or the early 1900s. So, I think, and everybody's got different issues. So you guys might come up with a different set of 30 issues. And if you want to research the issues, again, you know, remember for one of the older book challenges, I recommended go to SSRN.com or JSTOR.com, which are like academic research sites. So if I go to JSTOR.com and I Google, abortion, then here's the first one that comes up from the American Journal of Political Science, abortion, evidence of an issue. Evolution, the abortion controversy, conflicting beliefs and values in American history, and that's the Journal for the Scientific Study of Religion. There's women of color and reproductive justice. So what's the effect of the decision, Roe versus Wade on women of color? There's the consequences of professionalism and formalization in the pro-choice movement. I don't even know what that's about. The politics of career and homemaking. So there's lots of different scientific studies. Jay, Wookiee isn't Florida. Here's Wookiee right here. Say hi to Wookiee. Wookiee, say hi to everybody. Wookiee, can you say hi?
Hello.
Wookiee's not very talkative, which is probably the reason why I like it. Maybe for some issue is suicide rights are important. And that would be your issue. So this is why it's a good 30-day book challenge. Everybody could write the exact same book, but you'll all have different issues. You'll all have different understandings of the science behind those issues. You'll all have different opinions of the different candidates and the political history of those issues and the religious history of those issues and the history of all these issues. And then it becomes almost like the Bible of how to think about these issues. Mm-hmm. Like, I want to know.
Some depth. And you'll have some depth.
Yeah.
You'll understand why you believe in these things rather than you're just believing them because someone told you. Like, you won't be like, I don't know.
Right. Well, no, that's really important.
Or a follower or something. It's like, because this happened to you, you know, you'd ask people, so why do you believe this? Like, why do you not, you know, like this person? And they couldn't tell you an answer.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like, this is actually really good for kids because, you know, typically they're the followers, you know, they just listen and they just go whichever the wind blows. So it's really good for them to understand and to get some sort of depth in their conversation.
Yeah. Like I've asked both Biden supporters and Trump supporters, I don't ask them, why do you like Biden or why do you dislike Biden? Or I ask them, why do you dislike Biden if you're a Trump supporter? And if you're a Biden supporter, I ask you, why do you dislike Trump? And I've gotten lots of insane answers. So with Biden, if I say, why do you dislike Biden? People say, well, I don't like the fact that he is experiencing cognitive decline. And I'm like, okay, that's fine. But tell me one issue he stands for that you disagree with. And no one really understands the issues. And I wish, and same thing with Trump. Tell me one issue. Don't just say he's a fascist or he's the next Hitler. If he's the next Hitler, I don't, then you have other problems with him. But like, tell me one issue you disagree about. And nobody has ever answered me on either Biden or Trump. No one's really answered me with an actual issue. And so if someone were to do this 30-day book challenge, and again, the 30-day book challenge is, what are your 30, or even just do the 20 top issues and do, for each issue, do a history of the issue on the planet. So what's the history of abortion on the entire planet over the past 10,000 years? Do a political history, which means in this case, when did pro-choice become so aligned with Democrats and pro-life become so aligned with Republicans? Because again, Richard Nixon, a big Republican from 1950 to 1980, he was pro-choice. So Republicans were pro-choice for a long time. The Supreme Court justice that Nixon appointed was the defining vote on Roe versus Wade. So,
And also it's a good idea to maybe look at the candidate, you know, go through their history.
Yeah. That's a good idea. So, for each candidate, did they switch positions because it was politically useful to them? Like, what's their real intellectual honesty? And then also, what's the science behind the issue? So again, guns versus no guns, depending on where you stand, is there science like no guns reduces crime or more guns reduces crime? Because I've heard both arguments. What's the science on it? And then if you have a personal story or if you know of other stories, write those. You could even have 10 issues, right? And given all that I just said, you could finish it in 30 days. It'll probably take 3 days per issue. So, because first the history, then the political history, then the science, and then a story. So that takes 3 days. And in 30 days, you're done with a book. You go to 99 Designs, you do a contest for people to make the book cover, and then you upload it. And by the way, this is a perfect book to launch at the end of July. So it's almost July 1st. So if you launch a book like this at the end of July, which is right when all the conventions are happening, this will be a bestseller. You'll have a bestseller in your hands. And by the way, when I give these book challenges, I do see that some people do them and people seem so happy and they send me their books and I will list them. If you write this book that I'm suggesting now, I'll even have you on my podcast to talk about it because I want to understand these issues. And there's a lot of them. And again, each issue should be such that some people define their lives around that issue. So some people define who they are based on whether they're pro-choice or pro-life or they're for healthcare for all, or they're not for healthcare for all. So, and they define their friends that way, their party that way, and so on. So I think it's such a great book because, like you say, like we went to, a Black Lives Matter protest, and I've talked to other leaders in the BLM movement, and, a lot of people don't even know the issues. Like, what are the issues with blue collar licensing reform? What are the actual issues with felony and prison reform? What are the issues with law enforcement reform? A lot of people don't know. So you could have a whole section in this book that's just about Black Lives Matter, and that would be interesting. Mm-hmm. So that is the 30-day book challenge. Someone just suggested I should have a page set up for all the book challenges. That's a good idea. Let me think about the best way to do that. So here's what I'll do. Text me anything you want or questions for this Q&A or tomorrow's Q&A or the next is at 203-590-8607. Jay, can you print that one? 203-590-8607. And whatever I do in terms of a page for book challenges, I'll send it to the people who text first. And because I love getting everyone's texts, I just responded to a whole bunch of texts. And so that is the 30-day book challenge. I hope you like that. And I'm a firm believer everyone should write a book. When I first started talking about the book challenges, I described a couple of people who you can make a living just writing these 30-day book challenges. Let's say every book gets you on average. So first off, books don't have to be 200 pages. They could be 10 pages. So a good friend of mine and maybe yours, Kamal Ravikant, he wrote a book in 2010 or 2011, Love Yourself Like Your Life Depends on It. The book was only 8,000 words, which is about 25 pages. I can tell you that book sold over 1 million copies. It made him a ton of money. He was very happy. And, you know, I know other people who they do write one or two books a month. And on average, they don't have to be bestsellers. On average, each of these books sells $500 a month or $6,000 a year. But imagine if you did a book a month for a year, you have 12 books. So that's $6,000 a month, $72,000 a year. And then in another year, now you're making $140,000 a year. So I've been giving a book challenge every month and sometimes more. If you follow these 30-day book challenges and maybe even do your own, you will make a living. And people say, well, how do I market the book? How do I make it a bestseller? You don't have to make it a bestseller. The best marketing for a book is to write another book. Because if somebody likes one of your books, they'll read all of your books. Trust me. So I love the 30-day book challenge because, again, all you got to do is write it and upload it to Amazon. Write it, get your cover from 99 Designs, upload it to Amazon, and there's no rules. It doesn't have to be a certain... Like, I just finished a book for a major publisher. It had to be 60,000 words, 250 pages, blah, blah, blah. It's coming out next March, which there's reasons I'm doing it with a major publisher. I've also self-published a lot of books and I go back and forth. But when you self-publish, you all the rules are out the window. There's no book, there's no page requirement, no word requirement. You know, do the Kindle, do a paper. You could do a paperback. People think, oh no, it's just an ebook then. No, you could do a paperback. It's just a click. You could do an audiobook. Audiobooks actually sell better than the paperbacks, and you will make money. And then how do you market it? Well, let's say I was doing this 30 political issues book. So someone asked, why March and not now? Because standard mainstream book publishers, they go through a whole production line. So now it's got to be you. Actually, I don't even know why March and why now. I'm trying to answer this. Again, you know why they have to do deal with bookstores. But here's why self-publish is more interesting now. Bookstores are going out of business. Guess what? Will Barnes & Noble even come back? I don't know. Bookstores, we were just at the airport. All the airport bookstores were closed. So I might have made a big mistake going with a mainstream publisher. We'll find out. But I certainly think self-publishing is the way to go. Every single book challenge I've given you, I would personally read. So, and I'll give you an example. I don't know this guy personally, so I'm not making up this example. I'll give you one where I know the guy personally. Steve Scott. If you look at Steve Scott, he writes a book a month about habits. And I did a book challenge a few months ago about habits. If you want, I will summarize it in a future Q&A. Send me a text and say you'd like me to summarize it. But he writes another book every few weeks about habits. He's got like 100 books. And I know for a fact, because I've had him on my podcast, he makes $60,000 a month. And then he makes courses on how to write these books, or he makes courses on habits. Another guy who I don't know personally, Patrick King, He's got hundreds of books out there. Plus his girlfriend has hundreds of books. They are making a shitload of money. And let me just look up Patrick King a second because I don't know him, so I can make a little bit of fun. I have never read any of his books. I've never bought any of his books. I'm just fascinated by how many books he has sold. They don't even like it that I'm searching for him. He's like third in the search. And look, I don't even know what these books are about. Book is titled...
And they're only $3.99.
Yeah, they're $3.99, but on Amazon, you get 70% of the revenues, and on a book publisher, you get like 15%. Huh. So here's his last few books. Better Small Talk, Stop People Pleasing, The Science of Getting Started, Improve Your People Skills, Think Like a Psychologist, Improve Your Conversations, The Science of Likeability, The Art of Captivating Conversation. So what's the difference between the art of captivating conversation and his other great book, Improve Your Conversations?
How many pages are there?
Oh, somebody just called me, which is why the video was paused. It was probably Patrick King getting ready to yell at me. I don't know him. Okay, in this one, so here's a trick. So Improve Your Conversations, the book by Patrick King, among his hundreds of books. This one is listed in the stress management section on Amazon and business communication skills. So let's see. Better Small Talk, which is also about conversations. Let's just see where that's listed. Totally different categories. Educational psychology and behavioral psychology. Mm-hmm. So that's one way to differentiate the book, is that one book about conversation is in business categories. The other book about conversation is in psychology categories. Let's look at even a third conversation book. The Art of Captivating Conversation by the well-known author Patrick King. Look, it's in two different categories. Social psychology and interactions and conversation etiquette guides. So
how many pages are there?
This one's 141 pages, actually. But I bet you if I get it, a lot of them are based on maybe other books he does, or he's just gotten really good at like writing really fast. Who even knows? Who knows? So, again, if you just follow the advice in these book challenges, by this point, you would have written four or five books. I think I've given actually five book challenges since we started. And you will start making a living writing books. Now, let's answer some questions. Text me at 203-590-8607. I've got a bunch of questions all set up. And then later, we're going to get to the BS headline of the day and the good headline of the day. Okay, someone asks, they just read, and this is a true story, in the latest stimulus bill, over a million people got their over a million dead people got the $1,200 stimulus checks. Did you know that?
What?
Yeah. So, you know, remember, they were giving $1,200 to everybody who paid taxes last year. And the IRS knows if you're dead, but the Treasury Department does not know if you're dead. So a million people got stimulus checks who are dead. And so someone asked me a reasonable question. So that's, you know, that's over a billion. That's over $1.2 billion of money, of U.S. taxpayer money, went to dead people. And so the question was, who got that money? And so the IRS has come out and said, we need that money back. If you're dead and you got a stimulus check, we need it back. Whoever cashed that check, we need it back. Because here's what happened. Let's say my dad died and I got the check because I'm getting all his mail, I could just deposit it in my name and I could just sign it over to me if I have control of his estate. So believe me, that money got cashed. $1 billion of taxpayer money did get cashed. The IRS did not get that money back from anybody. And so the IRS has come out and said, we want that money back. But here's the question I have. The IRS Trump's been firing everyone at the IRS. The IRS doesn't even have enough money to collect taxes. How are they going to collect the checks they sent out accidentally to a million dead people? The second thing I have to say is, what's your problem? Let people cash those checks. The more stimulus in the economy, the better. Well, so why resent all the people who...
Well, but that money could go, you know, to other people that need it. not just the people that are getting it twice.
I agree with you, but they said $50 billion as bailouts to the airlines. So instead of sending $50 billion to some corporation that's just going to pocket the money or pay down their foreign debt holders with it, don't bail out corporations. Just give the money.
Right.
The next stimulus bill should be directly to the people at the bottom third of the economy who are struggling. And that's the best way to stimulate.
Is that what you're
doing? No, they're not doing anything like that. They're giving money to corporations.
Oh, I thought you said that they gave $1 billion to people that were dead.
In the last stimulus.
Okay.
So I'm saying in the next stimulus, I'm saying just give directly to the people. So I would say just throw this, the package, the money they send to dead people, just fold that into the next stimulus package. Like all you want is to send money directly to people and that will stimulate the economy.
Right.
But they keep thinking this, they're like religious about this trickle down theory of the economy, like give money to the richest and the poor will get the money magically somehow. And I do, by the way, think that that works most of the time, but now we don't even know who's at the top of the economy. Like GNC just declared bankruptcy. Other, you know, hotel chains, malls, all the, you know, JCPenney, all these companies are declaring bankruptcy. So.
Well, we talked about that too, that it was going to happen anyway, because Amazon.
Yeah, Amazon's just dominating. So that's why forget the big companies, forget bailing them out. Just give money to the people who are going to spend it the day they get it, the bottom third of the economy. Like if I'm standing online for food every week to feed my family and someone sends me a $1,200 check, even if it's to my dead grandfather, I'm spending that money the next day. Like I'm buying food and then I'm going to buy a watch maybe because I'll spend it. I'll just do whatever. And then that money gets spent and so on.
You're not going to do that. You wouldn't do that.
Well,
you just said that you would do it, but you wouldn't do it.
I wouldn't buy food?
You wouldn't spend somebody else's money. You would send it back.
I would absolutely spend my dead father's money. He doesn't. He
not if it doesn't belong to you. It belongs.
They sent it to me.
Those
so
people
I'll spend
need it. So give it back to the government, and then they'll send it to somebody that needs it.
Fair enough, but I think they should spend it to the people. Give it to the people who need it anyway. So that's the problem is they haven't been giving it to the people who need it. They gave billions to Delta Airlines, which is probably going out of business. They could have spent billions giving it to people who actually need it. Like it's insane.
Yeah.
And so, so that's where it's going. And the IRS says you got to give it back or it's against the law, but whatever, like they're not going to get it back.
I have to say, Airbnb has changed my life. I just love staying in Airbnbs. Like in about a month, I'm going to Cocoa Beach, which is right next to Cape Canaveral. I'm going to watch some rocket launches. I'm going to, of course, be staying in a very nice Airbnb on the beach. And it's just such a great experience. Like the whole world is available to us now because of Airbnb. But whenever I'm at an Airbnb, I always realize, you know, the home that I left to come to this Airbnb, I could be making money on that right now by hosting and being an Airbnb myself. So, and I've known people, I had a friend who basically, you know, made a living from turning his home into an Airbnb. So if you have a home, but you're not always at home, you do have an Airbnb there. And it can easily fit into your lifestyle. And it's a great way to earn some money. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host. The famous Abraham Lincoln quote says, "Good things come to those who wait." I wonder, did he really say that? Jay, did he really say that? Can you look that up? Regardless of who said it, that's only part of the quote. The full quote is, "Good things come to those who wait, but only the things left by those who hustle." Well, if you're a business owner and want the best people on your team, the same applies. And listen, I've interviewed 1,500 people now and a lot of entrepreneurs. I can safely say the one thing consistent among all entrepreneurs and CEOs, the successful ones, is that it's all about the people you surround yourself. if you hire well, you're going to have a great business. And, you know, thankfully, ZipRecruiter puts the hustle in your hiring, so you find qualified candidates fast. This is so important, and I want you to try it. You could try it as a potential employer or employee. You could try it for free at ZipRecruiter.com/James. ZipRecruiter's smart technology finds top talent for your roles right away. Immediately after you post your job, if you're hiring, ZipRecruiter's matching technology starts showing you qualified people for it. And I will tell you that I signed up on ZipRecruiter as a potential employee. You know, I just wanted to see how it works. And right away, it started matching me with really amazing potential employers. So give it a try at ZipRecruiter.com/James. Let ZipRecruiter give you the hiring hustle you need. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/James to try it for free. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/James. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
Okay. Oh, here's a question for you.
Me?
It was actually just sent to the text, but yeah. I'm aiming at you.
Okay.
You know, you've owned a hair salon. You had all these hairstylists working for you. Would it be an interesting idea to be a manager or agent for the top hairstylists in the city? So you could broker for them what's the best hair salon they should work for. And maybe the hair salon has to pay up to get the people with the biggest clientele list and the biggest social media following and so on.
Yeah. I mean, I guess if you're a salon, that would be a good way to do it.
You need to talk to an agent or a manager.
Yeah, to have an agent or a manager
recruit for you,
yeah.
All right, so that's a decent. I've never heard of that business before, but that would be a decent business to be in.
Right.
Maybe in every industry where it relies on bringing over a group of clients. I mean, that's how it works in brokerage firms. So if you're a really good broker, then brokerage firms, to try to recruit you, they'll pay you like $1 million for you to move from one brokerage firm to another.
It's because you're bringing all your clients.
Yeah.
So that's the whole thing too. If you find the good people that, they will, you know, they'll follow you. Your clients will follow you. So yeah, find the best deal.
Yeah.
That's what I would say.
So I'm wondering what other industries. So hair salons could have managers and agents. And obviously any kind of like manicurists and all that kind of stuff. What's another industry? Oh, you know, maybe, well, there are recruiting firms for lawyers, which is almost like an agency for lawyers. I don't know. There's probably some other, I wonder if there's some blue collar industries where they don't have, you know, career recruiting firms.
Right.
This is almost like being a recruitment firm.
Right. I'd have to think about that.
Yeah, it's interesting.
I also think combining, you know, a lot of salons are hurting. So, they don't have, the clients, or they just have old stylists that don't know how to do the social media. Maybe
that's a great idea, bringing
you know, the older ones in with the newer ones trying to do.
But yeah, by the way, I think that's a whole idea by itself though. Social media for hair salons and beauty services. Now, I do think there are agencies that do that, but a lot of hair salons don't do anything.
Right.
And all the time you see on Instagram, like people who just like hairstylists who just put up before and after photos of their clients. And those are the hairstylists that, you know, you people gravitate to, and you want to go to someone who's got a big Instagram presence or has a good copywriter working for them. So I think social media and copywriting in the beauty services space could be an interesting industry.
Right.
So, by the way, a few months ago, I said we had been walking around New York City, and I noticed that about 20% of restaurants were not just boarded up, but they were actually shut down. Like the restaurants were for rent. And that's really sad because like all these places that we used to go to, all these places that we used to order delivery from are just out of business forever. And I said on this IG Live that double that are probably truly out of business forever. We just don't know yet because they want to get the next PPP loan. So they haven't announced that they're going out of business. So Yelp just announced today that 41% of all the businesses listed on Yelp have closed for good since the pandemic began. And so I want to kind of match that with positive news, because I think that's really negative news. On the one hand, this is not really positive, but bigger, well-financed chains are probably doing well because they're getting more market share when all the mom-and-pop restaurants are out of business. So that's why some restaurant chains, the stocks have been going up. But I do think this is a sad thing. And what I would encourage is that all of these businesses that have closed for good, you should set up GoFundMes for your employees, pass the word around, help your employees out. And, you know, I think this is also a bad sign for corporate real estate, because you can't just rent out a restaurant space. It's got a kitchen. It's set up to be a bar. It's set up to be a restaurant. So I think commercial real estate is going to have a problem. So I don't know. Maybe you could turn these restaurant spaces into cloud kitchens, you know, and I would love to experiment with this idea that a restaurant, just like a book, is not, there's no rules. A book could be 8 pages and not 200 pages. A restaurant doesn't have to be a sit-down place with waiters and hostesses and cooks and so on. A restaurant is just a menu. Yeah. So I can say James's hot dog menu, and I can upload it to Uber Eats and Grubhub and DoorDash and Caviar and Seamless and whatever. And now I have a restaurant, and I can just cook hot dogs out of my regulated kitchen that's called a cloud kitchen or a commissary kitchen. Yeah. So maybe some of these restaurants should turn into commissary kitchens and rent out space to anybody who wants to be a virtual restaurant. Right. So
I think it's a good time to just try stuff like this, because, and think out of the box, because everything pretty much in society has just been tossed up into the air.
Yeah.
And whatever falls is going to happen. So you might as well just take an opportunity and think out of the box and do something that's never been done before, because, you know, people will listen. And I think people are eager to, you know, do something to survive. So
yeah.
Why not?
Yeah, I
agree.
Can't
get any worse.
So a couple people say, you know, Lane and Jazzrock1 say Yelp is horrible. I kind of agree. By the way, Lakoza says, heard about cloud kitchens from Sam Parr. I did as well. And the founder of Uber set up a business, cloudkitchen.com, where it's all about cloud kitchens. And if you Google whatever city you're in and cloud kitchen or commissary kitchen, you could find local kitchens where you could set up your own restaurant without it being a real physical location. So I do think this is the future of restaurants. Now, two people said that they hate Yelp. I hate Yelp as well, because I feel like the customers are holding restaurants hostage. Like, if you just give a business a one star, it's like hurts their business. I don't like when anybody has their hand in my pocket. And I feel like these anonymous Yelp reviewers, a lot of them are competitors,
right,
have their hands in my pockets.
That's
terrible.
Hate
it. I hate the fact that on Google Maps, everything, every location has reviews. Like Mount Rushmore. All right, everyone's talking about Mount Rushmore lately because they're pulling down statues and so on. Why would Mount Rushmore have reviews? Don't you already know what Mount Rushmore is? And Mount Rushmore, you go to it, it's a man-made wonder. There are one star, if you don't know what Mount Rushmore is, it's these presidents, these huge, giant faces of a bunch of presidents, I think it's Washington, Jefferson, Theodore Roosevelt, and Lincoln. Their faces are carved into this mountain. And it's in South Dakota, which I didn't know until I looked it up. And you have to, who would give it a one-star review? Who would give Mount Rushmore a one-star review? So I looked it up. This was a one-star, this was the first one-star review that showed up. There were hundreds. There was like 1,000 one-star reviews of Mount Rushmore. So stupid. And here it was a one-star review. I can't believe I drove 2,000 miles to see this, you know, horribly defaced, once beautiful mountain. Are you kidding me? You're going to drive 2,000 miles? You don't even know what you're driving towards? Did someone just tell you, hey, buddy, you should drive 2,000, get in your car right now, drive 2,000 miles. There's this really beautiful mountain called Mount Rushmore. You really have, maybe you could ski down it. You really have to check it out. And then you go there and you say, oh, they defaced this once beautiful mountain. Again, in order to do things, you have to know things. Mount Rushmore, the whole point is, is it's not that it's defaced, it's faced. They put four faces on the mountain. That's the point. So all these people writing reviews are idiots. If you really want an exercise in stupidity, go check out the 5-star reviews on Auschwitz, because who's giving a 5-star review to Auschwitz? Like, what? You don't like the gift shop or something? Like, or you do like it, or you like Auschwitz for some reason? So, you know, reviews are a tricky thing. It's not always a good thing. So, question, is it time to buy silver? Someone asked me an investment question, and I don't like to, I'm not giving recommended investment advice. Don't listen to my advice that I just give on an Instagram Live. But here's the way I do actually like silver. Because for one thing, gold is sort of bullshit. Like, why do people buy gold? You cannot buy a single thing in the world with a gold coin. Have you ever even had a gold coin?
No, I don't think so.
I've never seen gold used as money. Silver has not only currency use, like silver is made into currency and it's a commodity that people value like gold, but silver has industrial use. You can make semiconductors with silver. It's a good conductor of electricity. There's antibacterial use of silverware, of silver. That's why silverware is made out of silver, because it's antibacterial. That's why you get silver cavities, because it's antibacterial. It gets rid of infections. And let me give you another reason. Historically, gold divided by silver there's usually a ratio of about 60. So the gold to silver ratio is about 60 in over the past 30 years. So the right now, the gold to silver ratio is over 100. So it's about 60% more. It's 66% more than the average. So gold and silver have gone like this. This is gold and this is silver. So I do think it's a reasonable strategy to buy silver, and if you want to be safe, sell gold. But I do like the idea of buying silver here.
I think copper is better.
Copper could be better, but silver and gold are commodities that kind of are linked together. But I do think because of copper's antiviral properties, maybe it cures coronavirus, who knows? And plus,
well, it kills it.
Once I start making my copper-infused pajamas, I'm wearing my pajamas now for the 42nd day in a row. Once I start infusing my pajamas with copper, there's going to be huge worldwide demand for copper. So yes, I think they should make statues up now in copper. And then they're probably a little easier to tear down. Is copper weaker than, what do they make statues out of? Stone? Cement?
Well, maybe there are copper statues or brass or, yeah.
Uh-huh.
They usually make them out of stone.
There's going to be no statue soon. They're tearing down so many statues. By the way, again, I asked this the other day. What is going on in the Chaz? How come every headline, I am so bored. Like, here's the CNN headlines today. Like, you know, it's all about, like, coronavirus and Trump. I'm so bored. In Texas, questions grow about a lesser-known U.S. attorney. Who cares? Analysts, what is Trump's agenda for a second term? Who cares? It's the same agenda as Biden, probably. Biden says he would make face masks mandatory. Well, what if I was in the middle of Mount Rushmore? Like, would I have to wear a face mask so that Theodore Roosevelt's face wouldn't get coronavirus? Like, what does that even mean? Trump calls out reporter on face mask. Who cares? Now we're seeing articles written about reporters, written by reporters about reporters. Like, that's even dumber than usual.
It's sort of like, I don't know, like high school politics or junior high, actually, politics.
Yeah.
It's just like they've turned into these kids.
Yeah. So I want to know, what is going on in the Chaz? Again, 2 days ago I asked this. The weekend before this weekend, a 19-year-old kid got shot and killed. Who killed him? This is supposed to be a representative autonomous zone, the Capitol Hill Autonomous Zone, Chaz, in Seattle. I don't know if it's some people say it's an arts festival. Where is the headline about the 19-year-old who got killed? Or last night we saw a video of some guy screaming, like, get me out of here. And
he was saying to get them out. He was throwing their crap in a pile, saying, just leave.
Yeah, so what's going on? So I think every state should have its own autonomous zone.
I think
zone.
We should just have our home as our own autonomous zone.
Yeah, well, and right. maybe expand it. Maybe in the Upper West Side of New York, maybe there should be from 72nd Street to 78th Street on Broadway, the UWSAZ, UZAZ, the Upper West Side Autonomous Zone in New York City. And then you know what you can do? Because now people aren't traveling internationally, you can have an Olympics of all the autonomous zones. And then people could fight it out. It could be a reality show. Like, people could fight it out to be the warlord in each autonomous zone. And, you know, the Upper West Side of New York City is all Jews. So I might have a chance of being the warlord of USAS. And, you know, I'm going to have, I would have freedom of speech for anyone who agrees with me. Total freedom of speech if you agree with me. And I would, you know.
And if they come in here and try to hurt us, we have guns.
Yeah, yeah. Right to bear arms or right for bears to have arms. So freedom of health services, if it's outside, you know, freedom of other healthcare providers to come into the zone.
Right.
Give them total freedom.
If we want the police to come, we can call them.
Yeah, freedom of religion, unless you're too religious. That's a little annoying. No elections are needed. Like, none of the lobbying for elections. I'm already the warlord.
That's right. Of your own home, see?
Freedom of property, because everybody's property should just be free.
Yeah.
So it's freedom of property. So no taxes. I think we should start setting up autonomous regions everywhere. Not that anyone has asked for my opinion on this, but now I will answer.
And then the kids have to do what we say too.
That'll never happen. So the kids are going to move out of, as soon as we set up the Upper West Side Autonomous Zone, the kids are going to move to Kaz.
Already live in one. Our kids.
The kids are going to move to the Connecticut Autonomous Zone, Kaz.
We have rules.
Or the New Jersey Autonomous Zone. Definitely my kids are moving to NJAZ, the New Jersey Autonomous Zone. Somebody asked me, if you're setting up a business right now where you're going direct to consumer, what's the best place to advertise, Facebook or Instagram? And the answer used to be Facebook, and for some things I still recommend Facebook, but I'm not being biased when I say this because I have social media presence on a bunch of platforms, if I was going to advertise, podcasts are the best place to advertise because you get the podcaster to personally read and his audience listens to the podcast or her audience. And there's great examples. Look at Casper Mattresses. I only heard about Casper Mattresses because of their podcast ads. And just from, you know, Casper doesn't make their own mattresses. They just make it from some factory, mm-hmm. or they get it from some factory. They put the Casper sticker on, and then they just advertise on podcasts. That created for them a $1 billion company. Mm-hmm. I mean, they became a $1 billion company just advertising on podcasts. And so I think that the best thing to do is, if I was an ad agency placing ads, is that I would find the podcasts that look like they're going up in views, like look on YouTube, and I would find the categories that don't have a high CPM, like a comedy podcast maybe, and I would advertise across 100% of them. I would just annihilate the industry with my brand's ads. Because you could get ads for almost nothing on a decent podcast. And again, Casper built up a $1 billion business. I never even heard of Blue Chew before they started advertising on podcasts. Turns out they're a Viagra generic, and they're advertising on every comedy podcast. I'm telling this one other company that I'm an investor in. You should advertise on podcasts. So someone also asked, what are common mistakes when doing a podcast? And I think the most common mistake is just thinking, build it and they will come. And this is the most common mistake, not just for podcasts, but for blogs and apps and websites. You always have to be unique, and you always have to hit, you almost have to, without knowing how to do copywriting, you have to hit the principles of copywriting. So you have to, have somebody who's famous with authority, you know, it's called authority, you know, using your product. You have to have social proof that your product or a podcast, for instance, is helpful to people. Mm-hmm. You have to ask yourself the question, why me and why now? Like, why is it urgent now for your podcast to exist? There's already a million podcasts, and a lot of them are interview podcasts. I'm sick of interview podcasts. Like, do something different than interview, you know, Jordan Peterson. Everyone's interviewed Jordan Peterson. Do something a little different. I've even moved away from doing interview podcasts. We're doing these Q&A podcasts, and a lot of the podcasts now, I'm just calling up my friends and we're having a conversation. I still do some interviews if I'm really curious, particularly if a new pandemic's happening, I'll bring on, you know, doctors or whatever. But what makes your podcast unique? Why you? Why now? Why is this urgent? Why is this useful? Why is this, you know, have proof that it's useful? So use the principles of copywriting to determine if you have a good podcast. And then the next thing is prepare. I see so many podcasts where the podcaster did not prepare. And it's the same thing with a product. It's the same thing with a business. It's the same thing with a book. Don't write it. I see so many books. How to be happy. And then, oh, step number one, be grateful. Step number two, be kind. Step number three, have lots of friends. Step number four, eat lots of greens. Step number five, sleep 8 hours. Like, how many books are that way? And then, the business self-help. I'll write a business self-help instead. Oh, follow up every day with your customers, you know, or, you know, here's the five techniques of sales. Like, you know, under-promise and over-deliver, blah, blah, blah. Here's, I don't really read business self-help, so I don't know those as well. But, you know, live in the here and now, live in the now. There already was a book, The Power of Now. I don't need to read that chapter in every other self-help book forever. So figure out why you, who are you, why now? And then make sure it's useful. Make sure you're being authentic. Tell stories. The biggest mistake in everything, product, book, podcast, business, is you don't have a story. Everything's got to have a story. I started off this IG Live Q&A with, we were on a plane. Was it safe? Everybody's asking me, was it safe? So we have a little story to tell. It was safe. This is what we saw on the plane. This is what we saw in the airport. By the way, the people who are afraid of planes, they're using RVs. And so Camping World stock's going up. So you have a story. You just don't say yes or no. Have a story for everything you're bringing up. All right. So, let me see. I'm gonna reload to see if there's any more good questions. What are some? I'm reading this question flat. I don't know if I have the answer. What are some business ideas that increase connectedness for people who are going to stay locked down during the pandemic? So I ask myself this question a lot. I'm gonna ask you guys. How many? And we always talk about this. How many friends do you think it's good for an adult to have? I always want to know, do I have too few friends or too many friends?
You have to define friends, though.
A friend is someone you can call up and say, hey, how's it going?
Right, but then are you going to say to this person, hi, I've got to talk to you about something, and it's like a very personal thing. I mean, that to me is like a friend.
All right, so...
an acquaintance is someone that is very... It's a very light conversation, and it's a very fun, you know, exchange, but it's not like someone that you trust with... personal, you know.
Right. So that's two good definitions of friend. So one, you could call up and ask a really personal question. Another one, you could call up and say, hey, how's it going? But it's not a personal question.
And those people could turn into the people that you trust.
So it's like concentric circles.
To build, yeah.
Another good friend might be someone you see more than once a week. That might be a definition of a friend. So yes, the definition of a friend is unclear. Most people are saying 3 to 5 friends. I wonder if I have that.
I'm one.
You're one of my friends. Kids are not my friends because they're my kids.
Kids are not my friends.
Like, you know, the thing about kids is, I always think about it, like a lot of people say, oh, my kid's my best friend, mm-hmm. and their kid's like 12 years old. And like, take out the fact that it's their kid. When would an adult ever say, you know what? My best friend is a 12-year-old.
Yeah.
Like, I have lots of other acquaintances, but my real best friend is a 12-year-old. You would never say that. Like, that would never happen unless unless your kid literally came out of your vagina. You would never say that. And so, and even for me, if the kid didn't come out of my vagina, I would never say that.
They're not my best friends, but they're my kids. So that's a whole different relationship.
Yeah, it's a different relationship. Yeah. They're not friends. Like, maybe when they're adults, they might be. And Jordan Peterson, by the way, to his credit, he wrote in his 12 Principles for Life, whatever his book's called, he has a chapter I thought was a really nice title, which says, raise the kind of kids that you would want to be friends with.
Yes.
And there's an assumption in that title that they're not your friends when you're raising them. You're their raiser. You're not their friend.
Mm-hmm.
So, how can you start a business that increases connectedness? Well, you know, there's Facebook, there's Twitter, there's LinkedIn. So there's an interesting question there, which is that Facebook now, or Twitter is a greater example. Twitter is a great business for finding out who your enemies are. It's a weaker business now it used to be the business where all my friends were. Now it's the business where all my enemies are, because they're all just, I see when people disagree with me, they're all arguing all the time. And it's so annoying going on Twitter or Facebook. I never hit home on Facebook or Twitter, because that's like just the list of your enemies who are arguing with you. And so what's a good place to increase connectedness? Well, I think I've developed friends, or at least acquaintances, from these Instagram lives. So create,
well, you have to have a common thing that you like to do, or that you believe in. Like, if say you're a birder, you know, join a birding group. Or if you like Taekwondo, you know, join a group. Or if you like to go off-road driving, an off-road driving group.
Oh yeah, and Susan Flynn says running groups. And
because you have to have a common interest.
Yeah, I think that's right. And so Facebook is usually a way, though, to find groups of people with common interests.
Yeah.
And I've used it that way. And I've actually met very good friends through Facebook groups.
Mm-hmm.
Shout out to the IDW. But they're a private group, so I probably shouldn't have said that. But I've met very good friends through, and I've also met good friends through the podcast. So if you're in a business where your job is to reach out to people and get to know them before you even meet them,
right,
that's often a good way. So but yeah, I would say not so much a business. I don't think about the business part, but there are good ways. You know, maybe this is a good book challenge. Like, what are 30 ways to meet friends?
Like, when you're younger and you have kids, you know, you make friends through the kids and their families, right? The kids
yeah.
and friends. And then
I never did that.
So it's an easy way to make friends, because you have kids the same age and this and that. But as you get older, you know, you don't have that anymore. So you do have to go out and join groups, and that could be online groups or whatever.
Yeah,
so,
no, I
group or something.
Or the Choose Yourself group on Facebook, which, you know what, I should participate more in. I should do these lives into that group as well. But good question. I'm going to think more about that. I think that's actually a potential newsletter idea, which is just all mm-hmm. about a newsletter all about friendship. Make it a free newsletter.
You can put it in categories. Like, I know that there's an Explorer group, people that like to travel
and there's the Explorers Club in New York City.
Explorers Club, because I love that club. And you really get to meet interesting people with interesting stories, and you can share your stories. So that's neat. I mean, if you have a hobby like that, I guess hobbies too, whatever.
Yeah, but hobbies are always weird. Like
something that you're very interested in.
Like, when I used to play poker a lot, I had just sold my first company. This was 1998, and I was so burnt out. Like, I hated business so much that I was so burnt out when I sold the business. So I started playing poker, and it was the first time in years that I was just around a group of guys and sometimes a woman,
mm-hmm.
and we would just be sitting there just making jokes all night. I played every single day, and from 8 p.m. to 4 a.m., we were just joking around with each other,
mm-hmm.
and literally lying to each other and trying to steal each other's money. So, like, that's kind of the nature of a poker friendship,
yeah.
and I considered them my friends, but then it was weird. It was like, when I stopped playing poker, I never spoke to any of them ever again.
Huh.
So sometimes when it's just out of an interest, Like I asked, I remember even as a kid, my dad played chess and he told me one day he just stopped going. And I said, did they miss you? Because I was concerned even then about friendship. Okay. I was like 12 years old or 10 years old. And he's like, no, I never heard from them again. And I'm just like, well, then they weren't really friends.
But you have to step outside of that. That's the beginning. You find people with an interest that you have the same interest. And then you take it out of that zone. And you say, hey, do you want to go have some coffee? Do you want to go have some lunch? You've got to take yourself out of it. And two, one other thing that's important, don't mix it with business.
I would
just be very careful. And just if you want to be sincerely, you want to have friends, you just keep it at that level.
I never followed that advice. All my friends, I mix with business. And because I was so busy with business, I did that. I mixed family too. Now my family doesn't speak to me. So that's how that goes. My two sisters don't speak to me.
Nepotism is not easy.
We have 35 seconds left. Tomorrow I'll go over some more side hustle ideas. I'll review the book challenge. I'll also mention some stocks. And then I'll answer questions. Ask questions 203-590-8607. And I will save this whole thing on IG and YouTube and podcasts. And I will answer why don't they talk to me.
That's great.
Earning your degree online doesn't mean you have to go about it alone. At Capella University, we're here to support you when you're ready. From enrollment counselors who get to know you and your goals, to academic coaches who can help you form a plan to stay on track, we care about your success and are dedicated to helping you pursue your goals. Going back to school is a big step, but having support at every step of your academic journey can make a big difference. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu.